Second chance at what? Burton said. He felt frightened at what God might answer. He was much relieved when God, the All-Father, only now did Burton see that one eye of Yahweh, Odin, was gone and out of the empty socket glared the flames of hell, did not reply. He was gone, no, not gone, but metamorphosed into a high gray tower, cylindrical and soaring out of gray mists with the roar of the sea coming up through the mists. The Grail! He saw again the man who had told him of the big Grail. This man had heard it from another man, who had heard it from a woman, who had heard it from... and so forth. The big Grail was one of the legends told by the billions who lived along the river. This river that coiled like a serpent around this planet from pole to pole issued from the unreachable and plunged into the inaccessible. A man, or a subhuman, had managed to climb through the mountains to the North Pole, and he had just seen the big Grail, the dark tower, the misty castle, just before he had stumbled, or he was pushed. He had fallen headlong and bellowing into the cold seas beneath the mists, and died. And then the man, or subhuman, had awakened again along the river. Death was not forever here, although it had lost nothing of its sting. He had told of his vision, and the story had traveled along the valley of the river faster than a boat could sail. Thus, Richard Francis Burton, the eternal pilgrim and wanderer, had longed to storm the ramparts of the Big Grail. He would unveil the secret of resurrection and of this planet, since he was convinced that the beings who had reshaped this world had also built that tower. "Die, Hermann Göring, die and leave me in peace," a man shouted in German. Burton opened his eyes. He could see nothing except the pale sheen of the multitudinous stars through the open window across the room of the hut. His vision bent to the shape of the black things inside, and he saw Peter Frigate and Logu sleeping on their mats by the opposite wall. He turned his head to see the white, blanket-sized towel under which Alice slept. The whiteness of her face was turned toward him, and the black cloud of her hair spilled out on the ground by her mat. That same evening, the single-masted boat on which he and the other three had been sailing down the river had put into a friendly shore. The little state of Sevieria was inhabited largely by 16th-century Englishmen, although its chief was an American who had lived in the late 18th and early 19th century. John Sevier, founder of the lost state of Franklin, which had later become Tennessee, had welcomed Burton and his party. Sevier and his people did not believe in slavery and wouldn't detain any guest longer than he desired. After permitting them to charge their grails and so feed themselves, Sevier had invited them to a party. It was the celebration of Resurrection Day. Afterward, he had them conducted to the guest hostelry. Burton was always a light sleeper, and now he was an uneasy one. The others began breathing deeply or snoring long before he had succumbed to weariness. After an interminable dream, he had wakened on hearing the voice that had interlocked with his dreams. Hermann Göring, Burton thought. He had killed Göring, but Göring must be alive again, somewhere along the river. Was the man now groaning and shouting in the neighboring hut, one who had also suffered because of Göring either on earth or in the river valley? Burton threw off the black towel and rose swiftly, but noiselessly. He secured a kilt with magnetic tabs, fastened a belt of human skin around his waist, and made sure the human leather scabbard held the flint poignard. Carrying an assegai, a short length of hardwood tipped with a flint point, he left the hut. The moonless sky cast a light as bright as the full moon of Earth. It was aflame with huge, many-colored stars and pale sheets of cosmic gas. The hostelries were set back a mile and a half from the river and placed on one of the second row of hills that edged the river plain. There were seven of the one-roomed, leaf-thatched, roofed bamboo buildings. At a distance, under the enormous branches of the iron trees or under the giant pines or oaks, were other huts. A half-mile away, on top of a high hill, was a large circular stockade, colloquially termed the roundhouse. The officials of Sevieria slept there. High towers of bamboo were placed every half-mile along the river shore. Torches flamed all night long on platforms from which sentinels kept a lookout for invaders. After scrutinizing the shadows under the trees, Burton walked a few steps to the hut from which the groans and shouts had come. He pushed the grass curtain aside. The starlight fell through the open window on the face of the sleeper. Burton hissed in surprise. The light revealed the blondish hair and the broad features of a youth he recognized.